Today on Vox Talks, how resilient is the financial system to climate risk? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, in March, close to 400 of you attended the third annual conference of the Banking Initiative at the IESE Business School, and that was titled Resilience of the Financial System to Natural Disasters. And climate and natural disaster risks are clearly different from more familiar forms of economic risk, and the conference discussed how banks and asset managers can and should mitigate and manage them. The insights from the conference and the research presented have been summarised in the latest Barcelona report. It's published this week by the CEPR. I'll give you details on how to download the report at the end. It's free. But first of all, I am joined by Javier Vives of the IESE Business School. He's director of the Banking Initiative, and he also led the team of report authors. Javier, welcome back to Vox Talks.
Thank you, and hello, Tim.
When we think of natural disasters at the moment, we're more likely to be thinking of the risk to the financial system from COVID-19, but the conference was looking further ahead and it was focusing on climate risk. How much can we learn about risks like that from what we're going through right now with COVID-19?
Well, government subsidies and public-private partnerships were instrumental in implementing COVID-19 vaccination programs and contributed to creating expectations of a fast-arriving vaccine that helped calm global stock prices in March 2020. The impact of future climate shocks on stock valuations could be similar to that seen during the COVID-19 pandemic, and climate mitigation investments, some with public-private partnerships, could also have a similar positive effects on stock valuations and for climate risk management responses. So on this, I think there is some room to be optimistic.
Let's look at the risk of natural disasters and what different aspects of the financial system can do about it. So start with central banks here. In the short run, how can they respond to the increased risk of natural disasters?
Natural disasters and climate shocks pose a fundamental question for the lender of last resort of the central bank as a policy response, you know, to dampen these financial and economic repercussions from such events. These events, as we know, can severely affect the economic activity, destabilize financial markets. At the same time, they can trigger a sharp stock market correction, resulting in a major loss of financial wealth, a spike in demand for liquidity, and so on. Therefore, from a financial stability perspective, which is a remit of central banks, those central banks must include natural disaster risk in their prudential policy framework. The policy response to stabilize the financial system, however, should avoid an excessive reliance on central bank backstops. This is so because the expectation of a bailout incites moral hazard in lending and risk-taking, and therefore the lender of last resort intervention should not become the default intervention to stem a financial crisis.
Yes, does that mean in the long run that we cannot really rely entirely on the central bank to mitigate these risks?
Central banks and regulators can do lots of things. Mm-hmm. They can accelerate the reporting of carbon footprints and design forward-looking scenarios. They can implement climate stress tests to identify not only the size of climate risk exposures in the banking and insurance sectors, but also the extent to which a transition path with early action is feasible. So they can do quite a bit of things.
One way in which we can mitigate climate risk, natural disaster risk, is through the transition to a green economy. How much power do central banks have to move this transition along, given that their mandates mean that they have to be neutral in many of the policies that would speed this?
Indeed. As we said before, the main mission of a central bank is economic and financial stability. And this is the way they have to act. But this is precisely why they have to act in front of natural disasters. For example, no, the European Central Bank has an inflation remit, which is really the principal one, but then they also have to help the economic policies of the euro area. There is, however, a more difficult and controversial question on whether climate change risk considerations have to impinge on how on the conduct of monetary policy and the management of central bank reserves.
Mm.
And the issue is that by applying the neutrality principle, then central banks may be by default tilted towards assets from companies associated with high carbon emissions. And therefore, this is an issue that has to be tackled. In general, when it comes to collateral frameworks for central banks and the reserve asset management, they need to align their policies with the broader net zero commitments of their countries or regions or areas.
Now, at the other end, we've got the actions of asset managers, and they have already begun to hedge against climate risk. We know that. But do you think that they're pricing this type of risk correctly at the moment?
Traditional models of asset pricing are not suitable to test whether climate is fairly priced. And the reason is because of the systemic impact of these natural disasters. This complicates the potential models that can be used, complicates the hedging activity of financial players. There cannot be really effective risk sharing. It's like saying, well, when there is a big catastrophe, it's very difficult, if it is the whole world, no, that this catastrophic event can be insured, right? However, large investors, in particular universal owners, such as large pension funds, are aware of the danger posed by this climate-related systemic risk. But despite this, there is a role for markets, no, to issue assets with more complete state contingencies that deal with these long-term risks.
And if those large pension funds, for example, decided the shareholder activism is a good way to mitigate these risks, do we know that that can be effective?
There is some evidence that this is effective, in particular when forcing disclosure of climate-related information.
Mm.
These disclosure efforts have triggered a shift in voluntary disclosure by several companies. The question is whether such information really matters for asset managers and whether it really, in fact, stipulates concrete results to reduce emissions. No? Typically, what we find, I think, is that open disclosure events, asset managers tend to divest of companies based on their level of emissions, but typically not based on emission changes, okay? And so this is a difference that has to be taken into account. The bottom line is that mandatory disclosure policies may be necessary if really greater disclosure is what we want.
You mentioned at the beginning that government action to stabilize the economy in this crisis, public-private partnership, they've invested in vaccines and also supported businesses. How much of a model is this for future public-private partnerships that may be able to mitigate this natural disaster risk that we're thinking about?
I think there is hope, and the COVID-19 response has led the way in a sense. This successful experience of vaccine development to fight COVID-19, I think, can be used really to draw some lessons for the importance of a portfolio of mitigation measures, you know, that increase the resilience of the financial system to natural disaster shocks. And this is where an analogy can be drawn with public-private partnerships with the vaccine development. For example, with investment in green infrastructures and technologies for carbon removal. All these technologies and investments represent a costly adaptation, okay? Like, for example, the net zero firm emission targets, no? Which entail quite a bit of spending on decarbonization technologies, coastal green infrastructure, protection of biodiversity, etc., to reduce the aggregate risk and improve social welfare. What the vaccine development shows is that what looked impossible, like to develop a vaccine in 1 year, turned out to be possible. So therefore, this gives hope to push innovation to fight climate change in a kind of much stronger way than what we did so far.
Javier, some people think that in the short run, governments should be actively preventing the financial sector from investing in firms that increase the climate risk. Do you think that that's practical?
Not really, because I would say that government or regulation should intervene mostly on incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so providing, for example, tax subsidy schemes that induce the firms and the public to be aligned with the net zero commitments to combat climate change, corporate emissions, etc. More than to try to control directly, because to direct controls typically have leaks everywhere. And then people, they find a way out, they find a roundabout, they bypass, basically. these controls. I think that the main thing should be to concentrate on aligning basically the social and the private incentives.
And so to do that, is it inevitable that we are going to be talking about climate risk taxes in the future?
Well, definitely. In fact, we're already talking about climate risk taxes today. A lot of talk about carbon pricing. It's true that carbon pricing is not easy to implement. Some forms of carbon pricing have already been implemented and are already implemented, although not generalized. And so therefore, definitely there will be more sophisticated carbon taxes or taxes which limit emissions. Here also, we should take into account, I think, that there is a difference between mitigation measures for COVID-19, if we want to draw the lesson from COVID-19, and government subsidies, for example, to develop carbon removal technologies and other protective measures such as seawalls. And the difference is that the latter do not have a direct impact on firm earnings, in contrast to the COVID-19 mitigation activities that at the same time protected workers, okay, and had an impact on the bottom line of the firms. So here, basically, as many decarbonization measures reduce aggregate risk to the financial system, this is an externality, a positive external effect, but do not affect firm earnings, a tax on capital might be needed to fund this efficient mitigation because of the externality. Mm-hmm. In principle, sustainable financial mandates that restrict capital market investments to firms that meet mitigation, spending thresholds, and other measures could be a substitute for such a tax. But they have to be significantly more stringent than what is observed in practice today.
Javier, when you read through this report, you realize the scale of the challenge and also the urgency of doing something about it. So did the conference make you feel more optimistic or more pessimistic about the resilience of the financial system to natural disasters?
Well, I would say optimistic in the sense that many excellent thinkers are pondering now how to address the challenge and are putting their minds to work in this direction, and also optimistic in the sense that more and more the financial system, the regulators, the bank managers, the asset managers are aware of the problem. Okay. And so in this sense, this is, I would say, it's an optimistic note. But at the same time, I would say that we have to be cautious because the challenge is enormous. So we need to reduce emissions basically as in the present COVID crisis, but in a sustained way for many years. And this is extremely difficult without stopping the economy. And therefore, we need a lot of innovation to get over this issue. So we need drastic innovation to make the transition the least costly as possible.
Well, it is interesting to see how many innovative ideas have come out of this conference. But as you say, it's something that we cannot afford to go to sleep on. So thank you very much for producing the report. Thank you very much for organizing the conference.
Thank you, Tim.
I'll tell you how to get hold of this report. You want to read it. It is a free download. It's called Resilience of the Financial System to Natural Disasters, and it's the third report in the series on the future of banking. The editors are Patrick Bolton, Marcin Kaspersik, Harrison Hong, and Javier Vivas. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week, so subscribe to Vox Talks. You never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 12 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.